Of course I can drive 10 speed. It's like 2.5 speeds.
Good day, eh?
Good day, eh?
Good day.
Good day, and welcome to another Forgeside Chat, a podcast about blacksmithing, bladesmithing, and everything in between, with a heavy focus on talent in the Great White North.
Hosehead's talking about candy.
And today on the show, we've got Timothy Dick joining us. You may have heard of Timothy Dick before from the good old YouTube. If you haven't heard about Timothy Dick, you've been sleeping under a rock because this guy's a Canadian superstar when it comes to YouTube. Check out his videos. I absolutely love Timothy Dick's videos, and I'm sure anybody else that's listening probably does too, because this guy does some amazing blacksmithing videos that really can educate you and entertain you at the same time. Really happy to bring Timothy onto the show today. Welcome to the show, Timothy. Thank you very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, you got to make sure to put some of that intro in where you guys were roasting me before you butter me all up, eh?
We'll stick it in the after show. Don't worry. Yeah.
Okay. Hey, I'm glad to be here. This is fun. Thanks for having me.
Tim,
for joining us.
Tim, you don't pick on the guys that you hate. I just got to say that out of the gate. Of course, big fan.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah,
all good.
Just you push the guys you like harder. Yeah.
Once again, thank you very much for joining us. Quick introduction of ourselves. You were asking earlier to, you know, kind of let you know who we are. My name is Lando. I'm the Abstract Blacksmith, residing in Winnipeg, Manitoba. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook as The Abstract Blacksmith. I don't really go to any of the social media stuff because it's just too much for me. Sitting down with me, I've got Nick Welsh, hey. Twisted Steel.
Yeah, Twisted Steel Blacksmithing in Red Deer, Alberta.
Are you serious in Red Deer?
Yeah, you betcha.
Oh,
yeah, you guys are neighbors, eh?
Whereabouts are you, Tim?
I'm 2 hours east north of Edmonton.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
So right on.
Closer to the Saskatchewan border there. So out in the middle of nowhere.
So like north of Lloydminster then?
Yeah, pretty close to Lloyd.
Yeah, there you go. Right on.
And I'm Nick Verbray. I'm Old Soldier Toolworks on Instagram and occasionally Facebook. And I'm out of Ottawa, Ontario.
So are you up late right now?
Pardon?
Are you up late right now?
A little bit. It's going to be a late one for me, but I'm fine with that.
thanks for it. Appreciate it.
I basically run on coffee and cigarettes, so.
Yeah, right. Coffee's going right here, I tell you that.
Excellent.
So, Tim, as I was telling you before as well, we've got a couple sponsors for the show. Maritime Knife Supply is one of our sponsors. And if you go to maritimeknifesupply.ca, you can use the code FSCKILN and save yourself $100 on Paragon or Even Heat Kilns. They also have anything and everything you could possibly need for knife making supplies, blacksmithing supplies as well. Check them out. Buy 10 pack of 10 grinding belts and save yourself 10%. That's one belt for free. It's at maritimeknifesupply.ca.com.
That's awesome. And not a plug for the channel, but I was actually looking on their website this week at some stuff I want to buy. So that's awesome.
Right on.
Nice. And yeah, you're not necessarily close to the Maritimes.
Well, what I'm finding out is when you're in the middle of nowhere, the shipping costs are almost all the same. So you can shop around in some sense.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. No, you're very right there. Yeah, that's for sure.
Now, you were residing in Vancouver area not that long ago. You upped your roots and decided to move out to Alberta. Do you want to discuss a little bit about the whole move and how that came about and how the move went for you? And, you know, where did that all start for you? Why did you decide to leave the Vancouver area?
Yeah, you want to know how it goes moving 65,000 pounds worth of blacksmithing equipment, like 1,500 kilometers? Well,
I kind of saw the video on YouTube, but
yeah.
What caused the departure from Vancouver? What was
So, okay, yeah, sure, I'll get into that. Grew up in Abbotsford, which is about 45 minutes from Vancouver. Fraser Valley, for sure, closer to Chilliwack. Just throwing names, hopefully somebody's from around that area. Basically, it comes down to a nutshell that cost of living is nutso down there. So, yeah. My wife and I, and we had two kids at that time, we were renting a 500 square foot apartment, and we were sleeping in the living room. My oldest was sleeping in the bedroom, and my youngest was sleeping in the bathroom, just to make it work. So, my bed was beside my desk, so I would get up at about 6 or sometimes earlier, and I'd be working on the computer and be like, all right, babes, I got to hit the printer to print something, and that's 2 feet away, and the big old printer, burr, 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 burr. Anyways, long story short, we can't afford to live there. Not if you're going to do this for a career, or right. As it works for me. So the move actually was not spontaneous, and it was sort of planned. Probably about 5 years ago or 6 years ago, I was doing architectural work, blacksmithing work, trying to make that go. So pushing on that, and the realization came to that if we want to stay here and make this work, that is going to be working in West Vancouver and Whistler. That's going to be building out a crew of like at least 6 guys. That's going to be me on the road away from home. That's not something I want to go towards. That's just not my goal in life. So we were like, well, what can we do to start pivoting out of this? So that's where the idea was like, well, maybe I could try to get this YouTube idea to go good enough that we could not rely on clients that are permanent. So, you know, the high-end homes and whatnot like that. So let's try to start working towards that to see if we can pull that off. Very blessedly and gratefully, we have built that up to the point where obviously we've pulled that trigger last year. We moved from Abbotsford to, at that point we were like, well, we can go anywhere in Canada, where do we want to go? And we just decided on Alberta was a good fit for us in different perspectives, which it's turning out to be incredible. So then we found a spot that we liked geographically in Alberta, which is the area we're in right now. So then pulled that trigger. This all the actual property hunting, being able to get a mortgage approved and get that all actually happened at like lightning speed. And so last year was just, it was nuts, but we're really grateful to be here. So we found a place, and then it was like, okay, we got to make the transition and we got to make it happen. And how are we going to do that? So properties we were looking for, ideal was to find a house and a shop. So I don't have to build a shop, because that, if I got to build a shop, that's going to be a big downtime. How is that going to work out for whatnot? Obviously having a shop eliminates a lot of factors, because Alberta's got a winter that is wicked out here compared to the coastal boy.
Right.
So we found a place, but we didn't find a shop. And so then we're like, well, we're going to try to pull this off. We're going to move, build a shop, put the tools in it, be running before winter. And we take possession on June 1st. So
yeah. Yep. Okay.
So Martin was working for me at that time, and I had a shipping container out of the shop I was working from, which is my dad's property. So we made a plan. I'm going to stackpile as many axes as I can, get them forged, get them in the container so Martin can finish them out, and then I'm going to pull everything to Alberta and we're going to start setting up. So that was the plan. So it was, like, I guess this is a relatively fast version of just specifically on the move, but it was 1 week when I forged the last axe in the shop. Everything has to be on a flat deck going to Alberta. So we have 7 days to do it. And that's 65,000 pounds of blacksmithing equipment that has to be disassembled and moved. So it was like, looking back, you're like, oh man, that was crazy. But when you're in it, you're like, just do it. Go. We got to make this work. And the good thing about a blacksmithing shop is that breakdown is very fast compared to putting it back together with probably mostly anything, but particularly the power hammers, because The Beshe has about 30,000 pounds of concrete under it. I haven't set nasal up yet, the nasal, the 3B, so we didn't have to worry about that. But we didn't know that at that time, too, how that was going to work out. And we didn't have confirmation that the shop would be built until necessarily into August. So anyways, we broke it down, and it went really good on the breakdown. It was the truck was crazy to load the flat deck. It was a step deck. And the forklift that I had could lift 9,000 pounds, which was just enough to lift the biggest part of nasal, which is the heaviest weight. I think it's about 8,000 pounds lift. And this is the fun story of it, just the one clip, and then I'll keep going. I don't want to take too long on this. But when you put 8,000 pounds down on a trailer, they're like a springboard, right? They just flex, right? And the forklift that I had was not big enough to reach to put the hammer straight into the middle. So the first lift is going on, which is the power hammer. I can only put it on about a foot onto the deck. As you put it down, the whole deck and truck twist to the point where, like, okay, this hammer could just fall right off right now. Like, we don't know. And we were able to just, like, skid it on and get her on. And then it worked out. And then at that point, it was a jigsaw puzzle. Like we spent... I think it was actually like 6 or more hours of me just going with the forklift and just putting stuff on and jigsawing it, because it all had to go. And the driver, English was not his first language. And he was just like really like, no, that's good. And I'm like, nope, there's more coming. Nope, we're good. at the last load, there was a little gauge on the trailer. And it's tinging up. And he's like, that's it. I'm like, yep, that's it. We got the last one. So we put it all down. God. And we strapped it on. And then this is just the weirdest thing I've ever had. Like, the accumulation of blacksmithing equipment is like a lifetime sort of thing. Like, you put a lot of time into that. My first equipment was 13, and I'm now like 30-something.
Wow.
And the truck left, and then I headed home. And as I was going home, I passed the truck on the freeway, and you're like, that's all my stuff. Okay. That's a little weird. I hope I see it on the other end.
But that's gotta go through the mountains.
Yeah. I wasn't worried about it, but there was a certainly point you're like, well, if that's at the end of bottom of a valley in the Coachella, I'm never going to see that again.
Jeez, no. And you know, no amount of insurance is going to replace, you know, that.
Well, so here's the thing, right? Like, even if you put a monetary value on your blacksmith shop, where are you going to find another Nasal 3B or a Beshe, mm-hmm. right? Like,
yeah.
You don't just find those. You can't just replace those things. So there's a certain point where you're like, okay, see what happens. Hope it works out. Yeah. But anyways, in the shipping company did great. And we left. That was Thursday. The truck, we loaded up. We jumped in our truck and headed out here. And we got here on Saturday. And then on Monday morning at 9 a.m., here's the guy with all the stuff. So like, it couldn't have gone better. And then unloading this end. It was hard on this end because we just dropped it on the field, all of my stuff, because there was no shop. And then it's like, I don't know how long that's going to be. So if that puts a really weird feeling in your body when you're like, my whole shop is out in the rain and out in the grass, and I don't, I'm kind of stuck.
Did you have to like tarp everything or?
Yeah, I tarped some stuff. I should have done a better job because it actually was a really rainy year last year for Alberta, apparently. So the lathe got hit pretty bad out of the mold. I mean, the power hammers are so full of grease and grunge, it doesn't really matter. But anyways, long story short, we're in Alberta now and we're loving it. The shop was built on time and just go hard last year to get it in, get things set up enough to keep going. The winter was hard because it was only in January that I actually was able to get heat in the shop. So the Christmas zone was pretty cold, but hopefully this year we're set up a little bit better. So anyways, that was the move. Glad to be here. The Pulse on Alberta is awesome. We love the people out here. And even from blacksmithing perspective, like you just talk to people and they're like, oh, cool. Like they totally get it. Where maybe that wasn't the case in the Fraser Valley. It's touch and base. But anyways, yeah, we're glad to be here. Glad to be
awesome.
Running.
Stuff. Welcome to my home province.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's what kind of culture shock did you really find moving from, you know, Fraser Valley to rural Alberta, and where you are, it is rural. Like there is. That's
northern,
kind of middle of nowhere. Yeah,
that's an interesting question because I feel at home.
Yeah. You know,
we moved to this area because we had a church that we really liked, and so that was that's a big part of us, and so that was not a piece that was missing. So we have had good community in that sense. The other thing is that. And this is to my fault, I guess. I'm pretty isolated too because I just work on the property. So, you know, it's not hard, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not, socially, I'm not a really big guy. So like I can just work and be happy. And my wife is like that too. Like she's a homebody, which is awesome. So we really love it out here. Like this is awesome. This is us, you know, we're really digging it.
Oh, yeah, we blacksmiths do tend to be kind of like little dwarves and gremlins who live in our shops and don't really talk to anybody.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's
cheers
a lot
to that.
There you go.
That's right.
So, and then there's me who has, you know, 100 people a week into a shop. So,
are you serious? Very big
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
Typically, there's 100 people a week in our shop.
What is that teaching, or what is that doing?
Yeah, we teach knife making. So we do.
Wow.
One day classes,
100 people in 5 days or 7 days.
Yeah, thereabouts. Or not? Oh, sorry. Wow. Whoa, not 100. I screwed up there. About 40. And so, you know, every
that's still a ton of people.
Yeah, it's still a lot.
So more like 100 people a month.
Like an average, well, just over like 100 a month.
Yeah, we were averaging 100 a month, but now we're
good for you.
Much more than that.
That's super cool.
And you want to move into doing axes and
axes and just half day blacksmithing classes and that kind of stuff.
How long is your knife making course that you do?
One day we started 8:30.
Oh, it's one day.
We're wrapped up by 5:30. Everybody's got a
sheepskin.
Yeah, everybody's got a knife with a handle on it, and it's all shaped, and everybody's got a kydex sheath and a sharp knife. So
yeah. That's really impressive. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I haven't done any teaching like that, but the thing that would stress me out is like, this guy's, he's just lacking a little bit. He's not going to walk home with something.
Well, you know what? They all walk home with something. And
okay.
You do your best to, you know, to make sure it looks not like a knife-shaped object, like it looks like a real knife. It, you know, cuts and it's hardened. It's, you know, you try and it's got all the mechanics of a knife. So yeah,
what about the fear? Do you have to like worry about people coming in that aren't familiar with tools and having to really hold their hand?
That's 90% of the people that come through our door. I mean, nobody has a 2x72 grinder. It's blacksmiths and bladesmiths. Those are the people that have those grinders, right? So
That would be the stressful part for me, is working with people that just aren't familiar with being in a shop at all. That would be,
you know what though, the thing that it creates is everybody is intently aware that they're out of their comfort zone and they need to pay attention to the machine.
Yeah.
So nobody's complacent. Nobody's That's complacent true. Because how do you be complacent when you are exposed to a new thing, right?
Yeah.
So everybody's very aware of that. Yeah.
Well, hey,
you know who hurts himself on belt grinders? This guy. I cut the side of my finger. Yeah, well, I was sharpening an ulu, and we don't make very many ulus, and as I was bringing it across the top of the belt, I got my finger in the way. So, yeah.
I was wire wheeling a perfectly sharp axe yesterday. It's just one of the processes we have to do, and it hooked, and it flipped out of my hand. All clear. All clear. Everything was good. But man, that's a 4-pound axe that is sharp. That, so that's
that gets your heart going. Process.
Yeah. It luckily ricocheted and hit a piece of wood, so I didn't have to even do anything to it.
That's fortuitous.
What are you doing, Tim? What are you doing? It's just one of those processes you just gotta do.
Where's my coffee, eh?
No. So I've got a scale burn that I'm still healing up from.
Yeah, I've actually been really fortunate so far that I haven't had anything like super major happen. The one that concerns me the most is probably the angle grinders. Like I've had some really close calls with angle grinders, and you get so close, like so comfortable with an angle grinder. I try to mentally, every time you pick it up, it's like, not this day.
Yeah. It's a tool that commands respect.
Wire wheel and a button-up shirt is a bad thing to do, man.
Yeah. I stopped one. Luckily, I was wearing a welder's leather jacket. This was in welding school, and I stopped it right in there. It was all wound up, right?
Yeah.
Just plugged it up, and then I landed one on my seat, a grinder running. It was a quarter-inch grinding wheel. It wasn't cut off, and that took a bit of my pants out, but it could have taken a bit more in a heartbeat. Yikes! But you just got to be on it, right? You know?
So,
you know, one of the things that I'm curious about with yourself is, where did this whole adventure start for you, Tim? What was it that sparked blacksmithing for you in your life and working in a shop? And how did you manage to get to this point, my man?
Yeah, I don't think it's actually... Well, I'll just tell you how it is. Just like every other 13-year-old boy, hey, this is cool. You know? And then I wasn't stupid enough to quit when I should have.
Where was your first exposure?
Yeah, so I grew up in a family that was kind of, I guess, like, a tinkerer, fixer, builder, do-it-yourself kind of people.
Right.
And so that's just kind of in the background. And then we were studying medieval times in school. I saw a picture. It's just a wee little picture of chainmail. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. I should try making that. So then it was like, find the clothes hangers from the closet and cut those and bend those and make it the rings and figure out the pattern. No. Like, oh, this is cool. And then you're like, hey, you know what? I'm going to try building a whole shirt of this. This sounds awesome. So then over the summer, just banging out rings. Like my dad, I think I paid for it with money from my paper route, but he picked up 14 gauge fencing wire, galvanized, just single wire. So then I was like, oh, this is way better than clothes hangers. Cause before I was just doing the MCC or the thrift store stuff.
Yeah.
And then just went to town making rings. And like my dad, like, okay, we're going to teach you how to use the angle grinder with the zip disc so you can cut them and then just did that. So over the summer, built the shirt and was like, oh, this is pretty cool. What's next? Well, what happens if I get a forge and we try forging hot steel? That sounds cool. So my dad helped me build like this brake drum forge. And then, you know, as soon as you light the forge, you're like, oh, yeah, this is awesome.
world opens up.
And then you know, you start, this is going to date me, but like, reading books, going to the library and like getting anything you can. At that time it was Anvil Fire, and then later iForge Iron came on. Those were in the glory days of those. Actually, Anvil Fire, I was past the glory days. iForge Iron was pretty good, but you like soak up everything as like a young teenage boy. Yeah. And then it was just simple. It was like, this is expensive. What am I gonna do? I'm going to make stuff to sell. That's what I'm going to do. So craft shows start pinging on that. I had a paper route, and I had chickens, like layers, to be able to make a little bit of money. And that would just fuel everything, right? And just go. So real natural progression was just keep going on it. And then I was also homeschooled, which was incredible because the concept came, if you work hard, get your school done, you can do what you want to do. Well, I know what I want to do, so I'm going to go get this done and do that, which was really awesome. So I would spend like at least half a day in my young mid-teenage years just being at the forge going full tilt, just doing whatever I could do. And those, if anybody's listening, I hope this is encouragement. I still treasure that time as development that I didn't get anywhere else. And it was just super simple tools, just learning hammer control. I did one project between the 2 years of high school. I was actually able to get custom projects. Thank you to those people for trusting in me. Oh my goodness. And it was like, I got to flatten out 40 feet of 3/8 round bar with my 3-pound hammer. Okay.
Holy
like I didn't know, like, I was like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to do it. Just go. And that's what I did. Also, I hope that's encouragement to somebody too, is like, if you don't have the tool that you think you need, be creative to figure a way around that. So either that's designing it with the tools you have, or you just got to be like, okay, I just got to do this. Let's do it.
Yep.
You know? Yep. And so anyways, custom projects through high school, which was very great. I had early on, I got to spend one day with a blacksmith. He taught us a course. And that was like the best day of my life almost. I can't say that, but at that time it was really great. And then he actually hired me on for 2 weeks just making scrolls. And that was awesome. Like, I would just interrogate him with questions. What about this? Awesome. Where do you get that? How do you do that? Whoa. Like, you know, like a young teenage boy. And then it kind of worked out really pretty great that coming out of high school, I actually got a job. It was kind of offered to me at a historical site, Fort Langley's, be the interpreter blacksmith.
Nice.
And that was kind of fun too, because I could get my stuff in the gift store. And so then that was Tim honing in his business skills of like, do the demo. If you want this, go to the gift store on your way out and you can buy it. And just like selling it. I was like savage. I would just go hard. I made hundreds of courting candles and just like told the whole story, had it into the spiel, and just went like nuts on that.
Quick introduction. Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry. I'm ranting.
No,
sorry.
Perfect. We're loving
it. I said
it
beforehand that this is what we want to do, is just give Tim the microphone. You guys, he's got stories, man. Let this guy tell stories. But what you're saying about how you sold, how you were so hungry for that, Brian Housewort, once again, jumping in here with this is his thing. 50% of what we do is making something. The other 50% is selling it. And right there, dude, you just explained it perfectly, how you spent so much time making something in a demo, but then afterwards you honed in and you took those skills and you were like the salesman on top of being the maker, right?
Yeah. I mean, that we could get into that on a more complex scale, but if your natural tendency is to be the guy in the shop, usually your natural tendency is that you're not a very good salesperson.
There's that.
And that is super unfortunate. And so it comes down to the point where being an incredible craftsman is honestly not good enough. And so you need to be more on top of that. And that is brutal. So if you only want to be a good craftsman and you want to be the best you can, work for somebody. Because then you can get in the shop and you can be on the shop floor for 40 hours a week. Give it. The big sacrifice to that is the one out of the gate is that you don't get to necessarily build exactly what you want to build. So then that's a compromise that you have to decide on. But if you're the one man show and you want to make what you want to make, then you're going to have to sacrifice huge amount of time to selling that product and, and leaving the story. We can go back to the history of Tim, but this is a fun topic too. Like that's why I went to YouTube. That's why I left the architecture world, because I knew that I had to be a salesperson that I could not be. I went to IDS West, the biggest trade show. I've stood at the booth for days and days talking to blue in the face about my product and why you should have it. I know that's not me. Where I'm in, where my zone is, I'm on the shop floor. That's where I love to be. That's where I come alive, right? Developing product and not being a salesperson, just being Tim, the guy in the shop. And so that's where YouTube has been this incredible thing for me is I just wear my grubby clothes. I just turn on the camera and we just have fun and I just show you the product. And that builds a relationship with people who then want to invest into a piece of mine or building something, right? And it's been this really, really fun, natural, organic thing that I'm so grateful for. You know,
you can see it in your videos too, man.
I was going to say, I mean, I can imagine your experience working at that public-facing historical center. That must have actually kind of gotten you a little bit more comfortable with actually showing people what you're doing. I mean,
you know,
contributed to your ability to be a good YouTuber.
So what an interesting point. I came out of that summer being like, I will never teach. I will never work in front of public. I will never entertain. I hate this. It's all come back to me. But
yes.
It's different, you know?
Yeah.
It's very different now.
Yeah. So back to the history of Tim. You were working at the historical center Fort Langley selling.
Okay, yeah. So this was the greatest, a really great blessing for me is, as you're going to probably guess, academically, I could do okay, but I could not excel at high school, right? Like I'm not math, I'm not English. I'm shop class guy. So it was like 2 hours before I was going to write my English exam. And like, I got to pass this. It's the provincial exam. I got a phone call from a blacksmith named Paul Reimer. And he was like, hey, Tim, do you want to come do an apprenticeship with me and work for me for 4 years? And I'm like, yeah, let's do that. So that was 2 hours before the exam. So it's like, okay, get through this thing and let's go. Life is here. Let's go.
Yeah.
So I did the summer at Fort Langley, knowing that in the fall I was going to move to Cranbrook, which is about 1,000 kilometers away. It's about 10-hour drive.
Yeah.
East Kootenays Mountains is spectacular, beautiful
area.
Yeah, it's got a piece of my heart. Or my heart has got you, however you say that.
Same here, man.
So I worked going in, that was age 19, going in to work for Paul. And many good things and many hard things came out of that. Well, not many hard things, but some hard things. The good things were my time at Paul exposed me to work, an environment that I would not or have not ever come back into. And so that time, now I look back, I kind of guess you could almost say that maybe that's just the, as you grow older, you look back, I have seasons that I'm grateful for, but I'm not in them anymore. And you're just like, that was a great time. I'm really grateful for that experience and I'm moving on forward. And things from that trickle into fortify the seasons you're in. So what came out of the time with Paul, I know you've interviewed Paul. I'll just do a quick spiel. Paul's an awesome guy. He's a friend. He does architectural work, so really high-end homes in the States and in Calgary and in the mountains.
Yeah.
Like anything that a house would need out of steel, he would do. So like stairs, railings, gates, lights. But then Paul's heart is in public sculpture and bigger sculpture pieces. And Paul was just sort of moving into that when I was coming into. So my first job with him was like as the gopher boy, they were working on the Spirit Tree, which was a public art piece that was going in Cranbrook. It was quite large. I think it was a pretty big flagship on his part at that time. I'm not quite sure where he is with that now. But anyways, so I got exposure to bigger stuff. I got exposure to working with about six guys at that time. The shop fluctuated up and down through my time there, which is really great. And my progression through that time was a lot of fabricating, a lot of welding, and then doing one-off blacksmithing things. I would say coming out of it, I was a better craftsman all around, but maybe not as developed in forging as I was hoping to be. And that's just because my personal blacksmithing endeavors goes different than Paul. Paul really utilizes, or this is me saying what Paul, I shouldn't say that, but I think Paul utilizes blacksmithing as a means to create what he wants to create. Mm-hmm. And he'll utilize different processes to make a public piece because
totally.
He's got an idea that he wants to articulate, and blacksmithing is a like a pen or a brush to help articulate that. I would be more in the boat of like, the process of blacksmithing is going to create what I want to create, and I want to utilize the forging process. And so that's what I look into. I do look at how things feel and what I want to portray with this, but not to the extent that Paul would look at emotion. I want this thing to project this and that feeling to people. I'm not quite as on that. So, which is super cool to work for somebody like that. It's different, right?
Mm-hmm.
Paul really wanted me to get my welding ticket. So it was a really great course at the college. They offered an afternoon shift. So I would work from Paul from 8:30 to 2 and then go welding school 3 to 10. And it was self-directed. So the faster you weld and the faster you get those things checked off, you can keep going and progress through the course.
Best kind of course for sure.
Yeah, so I was able to go through and trigger the CB&A, and then I challenged my Red Seal, I think, at the time. Yeah, when I was still working for Paul, so just tucked that in the
back.
Wow. Did that.
Dude.
Which, again, that was a fun experience in itself because it was something that I haven't got to do. I know I don't want to weld as a career, but at the same time, it's fun to have. And those things just add to your repertoire to be able to help you in what you want to do, you know, which is now. So, yeah, and I feel like the other good thing at Paul's is I really swung through from like being the gopher boy to taking custom projects on, smaller ones, and then some of the bigger scales, I was getting quite a lead role on them, which was just good. Not in PR work and not on quoting, but on like managing, light managing people and projects. So that was mm-hmm. that was good development. Mm-hmm. So then 2013. I'm just thinking if there's any other highlights or is there anything else you guys would
that was 4 years you spent with Paul.
Yeah, 4 years.
Wow. Yeah.
That's,
dude,
that's really cool.
You accomplished
that must have been one hell of a learning
no
curve.
Kidding.
Yeah. That had to be. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No. Shoot. I've talked way too much.
I was going to say that really had to be quite the feeling, you know, you're this young kid, you just starting this. He takes you on as an apprentice and then he says, "Hey, I want you to manage this project." I mean,
No. So that's a good way to look at it. That's not how it worked. The way it worked was Paul was like, "Okay, you're on holidays? Yeah. You're on holidays? Yeah. Well, that leaves Tim. Okay, Tim, you're doing this." Oh, okay. And then it was you either do it and succeed or you do it and fail. If you succeed, you can keep going. If you fail, does it tick against you?
That's what failure is. Failure is
maybe.
When you stopped trying, right? When you don't fail until you stop.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was that time there. And it was fun looking back, working with some of the guys. It was good experience to learn. Like the Fenema brothers, they were millwrights and they were guys that could get things done in no time flat, like Jimmy Rigged. Yeah. Kind of like a farmer mentality a little bit, but millwrights. Mm-hmm. So like even things today that I still do in the shop, it's like, yeah, I got this. I know how to do that trick.
Oh, dude. So remember I had, I was telling you guys I had the girl that was coming to me for mentorship, right? Rebecca. She landed a gig with the local school, the local college, got her apprenticeship paid for in welding, right? Or not, it wasn't an apprenticeship, but it's like an enrollment course into welding to teach you.
Awesome.
She now just got a job. She's hired on her. She's starting an apprenticeship as a millwright, dude.
Hey,
oh,
yeah, that's awesome.
Man. Pretty happy
look
for
at
her.
You.
And so, and furthermore into that, I just hooked up with another young lady that is a fiberglass specialist, and she's getting me to do some metal work in conjunction with her fiberglass. And I'm just like, when I met her, I was like, okay, like, what's the deal? And she's telling me she's kind of like trying to figure this all out because she's taking over her dad's business and she's a little lost. And I'm like, whatever it takes to help you, I'm in, because I want to see you succeed. Like, to help see other people and help them. And I think where I'm coming with this is, Paul reached out to me at one point and actually offered me the same thing he offered you, Timothy, which blew me away that somebody like Paul would offer me that. I was very beginner at the time, and to have that offer from somebody like Paul was just mind-blowing to me. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to take it because of my family situation. My wife has a business that she's ran for 15 years now at this point here in Winnipeg, so she can't just up and leave, right? And our whole family is here, so to leave them is kind of... But dude, I went and visited Paul last summer, almost this exact same time. What an amazing shop. To have been able to spend 4 years in there and learning from that man. He is so kind-hearted as well in so many ways, but yet I can see that working for him, you probably faced a couple of stern moments, hey?
Did you say stern moments?
Yeah.
Paul and I are pretty united on a lot of fronts, so I feel like there was some things that a 19-year-old boy has to learn pretty quick. So yeah, he helped me out with that, coming into a working environment. But the one thing that I learned from Paul is to be like, well, I could say a lot of things I learned, but like, is get your mind in who you're working for was really important to me. So like, I really tried to understand who Paul was so that I could deliver the work that he wanted. And that was like a learning process. I think that would be anybody who works for anybody. And then the second one was like, I wouldn't even like plan what I would do that day. I would just show up. Hey, this is what we're doing. Okay. And then it would be like, he walks out, Tim, I need you to do this. I need you right now. And it's got to go in 2 hours. Okay. I'll do that for you. And then it would be done. And he'd be like, what about that flat bar that's supposed to be on there? I say that in a derogatory way. That's not, it was like, Tim, what about, like, why didn't you put that on there? What are you talking about? You didn't tell me about that. Well, it's got to be on there. Okay, I'll go add that on. Thank you for telling me. Now in 15 minutes, this thing's got to be gone. it was like really like, ooh. But Paul's mind is very special because that allows him to do the work that he does. Conveying those ideas is very can be very challenging. So that's where I would start to be like learning who Paul is and trying to be like, okay, what finish does this need to be? What details do I need to like ask a lot of questions to get at, you know? And that was good learning stuff, you know?
The mind of most blacksmiths is a very unique thing, I think. The four of us here are four extremely different people. So to say what you're saying about having to dive into someone's mind,
The different or the challenge with architectural work is that every project is different and every client is different. Something that's really important to me personally is that I want to know who the client is. I want to know what's important to them. And I want to know how to build this to fit their need. Mm-hmm. When you have somebody between that, then the communication line is different. And so you have to rely on the person communicating that to you to be able to articulate it well. And that is hard on architecture work because every project is different. When you move into something like a product, this is when life gets a lot simpler because you say, this is what I want. Here it is. Make it like this every time. If you don't know what to do, look at the sample I just gave you. And then it's like the learning curve is so much easier. So that was something that fast forwarding, and we can still continue on the pathway. When Martin came into the shop working for me, we were doing architectural work. But when he left, we were doing product. And so the swing was like, you can really, if you've got the right person, like product is sweet because you can really
tune into getting things efficient. You know what I mean?
Oh, dude. Where
custom work's like, it just doesn't feel right. I don't know what's wrong.
Well,
what do you mean?
This is so true. This is definitely the problem that comes into custom work versus doing production work. Production work, you know what your product is. Everybody knows what your product is. You just got to freaking make it as quick and as most efficiently as you possibly can and bring in them dollar bills.
Yeah.
When it comes to custom work, oh my dear Lord, the hoops you got to jump through. Ah, I don't know.
Yep.
Yeah.
It certainly requires a different mentality.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. A different person sometimes.
Yeah.
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 So I left Paul's place in 2013, the fall, and went back to Abbotsford to make it rich working for myself as a blacksmith. That was a great plan. My parents had 5 acres, which is where I grew up, and my dad had a shop. It was 40 by 40.
Nice.
And my dad is the greatest dad on the face of the planet because he said to his son, come on in, use it as it's your own.
Wow.
And that's what I did. Dad, if you're listening to this right now, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
I trashed his shop. We put all the foundations for the power hammers in there. Like, we cut holes in the shop. Man, we just went to town.
That was
2013. A really big blessing happened. I was trying to figure out equipment. I was looking hard for stuff on Kijiji. So people ask, how do you find your blacksmithing equipment? You kind of just say you got to have your ear to the ground and you look under every rock. And I was just scrolling Kijiji, and there's like an ad for a German power hammer. And I'm like, what? No. I see a picture. I'm like, this actually looks pretty legitimate. I better phone this guy. So I phoned him, and it's Hans Jacob, and I could barely understand his English. He's got a German accent. And he's like, yeah, good power hammer. Runs a German power. I'm like, what is German power? And like, I don't know. So, okay, well, I'm going to come take a look at this thing. Okay, yeah, come take a look. So Paul was gracious enough to come with me. It was in Sundry, Alberta, which we were doing work in Calgary. So it's just a couple hours, or is it even a couple hours? I can't remember.
It's about a little over an hour.
Yeah. So Paul came with me, and we drove up this nice little acreage, and this nice German guy, he's like, yeah, I'm retiring, and this is my baby. And he had a forge set up in a shop, and that was Beche. And the story with Beche is that he came to Canada in 2000. In 1999, he bought Beche, which is my power hammer. For those, if you don't know, it's a 100 kg air hammer. He bought it in Germany, which is where it was manufactured. He took it back to Beche, the manufacturer. They don't build the hammers, they refurbish them. It got a complete refurbishment. 2000, it comes to Sundry, Alberta. In 2013, I walk into the shop. The German power was 50 hertz instead of 60 hertz. So he had a generator to run it. The generator had a log on it, and it only had 200 hours on it.
Wow.
So in 13 years, it ran 200 hours. Wow. So it was essentially a brand new machine.
Yeah.
I didn't really... At that time in life, there was like no public information on Beche as a power hammer. There was like, I just saw it and like, this looks like a sweet machine. I don't know what this is. I don't know anything about it. I have this much money. I'm going to try to buy this thing. I hope it works. So it was fun. We got to sit down and the guy, like at that time, you're like, oh, this is a hard negotiation. And it was like, it was such a fun. He'd like, I'd say like, okay, he was asking, I think like 14 or something. I'm like, well, I got this much. And he'd be like, go full circle for like 10 minutes and then come back. Anyways, we worked it out, signed the things. Yeah, deposit. Okay, we'll take it. I couldn't see it running. And I remember at that time, I was like, this is a big deal. Like, I can't see the hammer running because the generator was broken. So we made some clause, like if it can't be run and stuff.
Yeah.
Looking back, like those hammers are bulletproof. you know, I could have quickly assessed it now to be like, yeah, this thing's amazing, but didn't know that at that time. Yeah. So anyways, we got the deal, bought the hammer. Looking back, I think he understood who I was and gave me a break because he gave it at me a good price. I won't tell you how much I paid because things are different now and I don't want to depress anybody. I got a good deal.
Well, everything just doubled in price in the last year, dude. So
I got in on that hammer at a perfect time, and the Nazel, which is my 3B, it's a bigger hammer, I got in just as things were starting to go up. So I'm really grateful for that. It's like, it's wicked bad.
Dude.
But don't despair. There is other options right now, which we could get into that are amazing that weren't there or around. Like Cool Iron Works is putting out some incredible tools.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
There was nothing available. So at that time in blacksmithing, where I was, there just wasn't a lot of information. I didn't know what I had just bought. So Paul again was really gracious to me. And I'm like, I'm going to pick up that hammer and I'm going to bring it down to the coast. And then in the fall, I can't remember what time it was, sometime in the summer, I'm going to set it up. So I grabbed a buddy, Austin Klein, if you're listening to this, and I owe you, man. He road tripped me. So we left at 5 a.m. from Cranbrook. We got to Sundry, Alberta, whatever that is, probably about 8. We loaded it up on a truck and trailer, overweight on the truck and trailer, Paul's 1-ton Duramax. And then I drove 14, 15 hours straight through the night, got into Abbotsford at 7 in the morning, backed it in. We unloaded it on that day, and Sunday we were there, and then we drove back on Monday back to Cranbrook, which is 10 hours.
Yeah.
Back. And that was all on a weekend. Yeah. Just get her done. I got my hammer. We're putting her down. Cow, yeah.
That kind of excitement can
sounds like one hell of a trip.
That excitement just keeps you awake.
I slept. So I drove the whole way, and then I slept the whole way back. I let Austin drive on the way back. He's like, halfway through the trip, he's like, you don't really trust me to drive your hammer, do you? Truck and trailer with the hammer on, do you? I'm like, not really. long story. Yeah, got that, and then set it up in my dad's shop, and then that's I think when we came into just a real hard season of life, trying to figure out, you know, what I want to do, which I thought I knew, just failing, going to shows. I would cold call, just drive around for like a day with these brochures I made up. They were really expensive at the time. I think they're like $10 a piece. Money was tight. Driving my 1991 Volkswagen Jetta with half a million clicks on it, and just going to every single like high-end home that's being built and walking, hey, I'm Tim. I make really great ironwork. Can I please talk to you? You need to buy this from me. And I did that for months, just like feet on the ground, cold calling. And it was just, there was not a lot of fruit coming out of that. Luckily I didn't have a big overhead, you know, in the evenings I was setting up the shop, the power hammer. And through that season, there was so many blessings too. Like, for example, the setting up Bechet needed, 30,000 pounds of concrete. The neighbor ran a cement factory. And so he's like, hey Tim, I got all this, out of spec product. It's actually better than what you need, but it's in bags. You can just have the cement if you just get a mixer and mix it and pour it. So, like whatever that is, 15 tons of cement on bags into a mixer, unloading it all by hand on the truck because I don't have a machine to move it. And then, okay, buddies, brother, we're going to pour this sucker on Saturday. We're going to do this. Get the power cement going and just mix bags like for 6 hours, just go, right? But like at that time in life, it was sweat equity. It was no money. I just got to work. I just got to keep going. And then it was like, again, same, like you could kind of have that just happened through things. So I was able to get the shop going in 2016, I got married. So then obviously there's more responsibility. You're feeling pressure. One of the projects that came out of cold calling was I went into a firm. It was a design firm. Their style of work was as far left field as what I was trying to do, but they're like, they called me back and they're like, hey, we've got this client and I think you'll get along really good with him. He's trying to build like a castle. I think blacksmithing work could work really good for that. So that was, it was, I call it the modern day castle. It turned out to be a project that went on for like 2 years. There wasn't a lot of money out of it, but at that time it was enough to keep going. I did railings for that house and bits and bobs and stuff like that. And then it was just honestly just struggling to make it. Like, that actually is true for up to. Okay, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it right now. Should I save it?
Do it. No.
Yeah. No. No, I gotta tease you. Yeah. It's a piece of wisdom. Yeah. No, there's a couple pieces of wisdom that I was passed on. I want to save it till when I get to the next client, because that'll
okay.
Be. So, one more project of highlight on that. It was a modern BC home, so it wasn't anything spectacular in a house. They wanted a new railing in there, a railing to go upstairs. So it was up like 5 steps, a landing, turn 90, up the next 8 steps. Yeah, something like that. And I, being the young Tim trying to make business and be like this guy that makes really cool stuff, walked in and was like, hey, instead of just doing a railing, why don't we just pull out the whole stairs and I'll be you a mono stringer with glass railing and it will go up and it'll be all this stuff. It'll be super cool. Like, yeah, that's pretty cool. How much is it going to cost? I'm like, wow, I think it'll cost like maybe $12,000. Like, that's a lot of money. Yeah, okay, we'll do it. So that was the first problem. I was under by 2 to 3 times the amount that I was supposed to charge for that job. And it was like, really trying to pull something off by yourself that you can't do because you just need more manpower. So I was like, brother-in-law, help me here. Brother-in-law, help me there. It had all this glass in it. And the company that I chose to build the glass, I don't know what the deal is. I would give them a template and there would be holes in the wrong spot. There would be angles that were coming, there'd be chips on it. It took months of the rule was 50% yield of what they bring. So if they bring you 10 pieces of glass, you'll have 5 that are okay. And then they bring you 5 more and you'll have 2 that are okay. It was actually worse than that. But anyways, it was like everything went wrong. I just lost money like crazy. But at that time, overhead was low. And so you could survive. That was one of the things that I was blessed with. I was raised with that mentality of no debt. And be thin as you can. And that was really important for the way that my business has progressed. Thin and lean and mean and sweat equity like you would not believe. How did I get introduced to this fella? Let me think for a second. Boy. Okay. I went to Kwantlen Polytech. They have a fair year program on the coast. And I can't remember why I walked in there. I just started talking to somebody, probably my cold calling days. Got talking to the instructor a little bit. Once he found out I had that power hammer bechet, he's like, ooh, that's really cool. Can we come take a tour? I said, sure, come take a tour. I didn't have any, I was just getting set up. So a class of 10 people, 15 people came and gave them a spiel, you know, architecture works, smashed some big steel on the power hammer. It was cool. They went away. While down the road, this is a little caveat that sometimes it's okay to invest into things that you don't think there's going to be a return. Not always, though. I actually have other things to say about. Don't worry about that. I didn't see anything coming out of this. Well, the instructor knew a guy, and the guy ran the horse-drawn tours at Stanley Park, and he was a guy that was looking for a blacksmith to build stuff for him and his business. If you're not familiar with Stanley Park, it's kind of like the crown jewel of parks in Vancouver. I cannot tell you how many millions of people go through it a year, but it's absolutely redonkulous.
I camped in there overnight once before.
So you camped?
Yeah, in a van in the middle of a park.
Oh, yeah. In a van. Oh, okay, well
I was in a van. My friends were in a tent next to the van, and then we got woken up in the morning by park security going like, okay, we've seen people in tents here before, but you're camping in a van, dude?
Yeah, it's...
Okay, sorry.
No, it's all good. Jerry, he got what I was trying to do. Like, he understood it. And when I say horse-drawn tours, like, as I got to know Jerry, he has this incredible passion business. Passion business is what we do. You're just like, I don't care what the business side of things is. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to make a living doing it. And he had done the full circle of life, struggling to get this thing up. And so he had this business running. So I think he saw that in me and was like, I'm going to help Tim. But more importantly, I want things from Tim. So that started this relationship of building stuff for his departure location, which is where people would get onto the carriages, go for a ride around Stanley Park and get off. And it was like, this goes back to that concept of you as the craftsman getting to know your client. I got to meet Jerry. I got to know him. Jerry was is OCD and like super wants it a certain way. And he needs to work with people who are passionate about it because that's important to him, and people who can deliver that. As soon as you deliver that recipe, money is not an issue. We will do that. So we had our little things work it out first, figure it out. Once we got on the same track, it was by the hour, let's go. And I would just, for like 3 years, I was pretty much just working for him, just doing stuff. And it was like, build the railings for the location, put brass on this, fix this thing for the horse things, just totally random stuff. He wanted to build this like legacy. He is working on that. And one of them was a horseshoe. So it was a sign. He wants it to be it's a sign, a horseshoe, and it's 8 feet across or something. So I don't know when this happened, but he would be at the shop and I was just like, hey, I make these bowls out of old steel, like train rail and stuff. That was a foreshadow of what's to come with the axes. I didn't know at that time. And I just told him, like, oh, it's a cool story. Like, I love forging things out of this old stuff that I find. I used to find old bits and bobs.
Bits and bobs.
So he's like, Tim, I want to build. Yeah. I want to build this. I want to build this horseshoe, but I want it to come out of train rail. I'm like, okay, sure, let's do that. So he found a guy that had scrap train rail, like, stuff. We shopped around, and so he dropped just truckloads of stuff off of the shop. It wasn't train rail, it was actually different parts, but I would just flatten it out. It was 3/8. It was girders, like train ties. Anyways, I won't get into it. We flattened it out under the power hammer, welded it up into bits and bobs, into plates, cut into the horseshoe. It was like an 800-pound horseshoe that was like deadly accurate to life scale. That'll be a sign that'll stand up someday. Stanley Park Horse Drawn Tours.
Cool.
Anyways. It hasn't come to full fruition yet. I signed off of that project, I guess, because I'm in Alberta now. That's okay. So it was like in this time of like just getting by, you know, and somebody had said as a business, like, you know, 6 years and your business should be up and running and you should be making money. And it was 6 years in and I'm like, telling Jerry, I'm like 6 years in and I'm like, we're just getting by. He's like, Tim, what are you talking about? The first 10 years of running this business was hell. He's like, I paid one credit card off with the other. Don't even waste time. Let's keep going. And that was it. Like, ended conversation. Like, who cares what anybody says about your business? You know what you're doing and just go get it. And it's going to be really, really hard. And it doesn't matter. You just suck it up and keep going. It was kind of like that, right? And I was like, okay, cool. Let's keep going. So it was I hope that's encouragement to somebody. Like,
I think so.
Like, I don't wish anybody hammering on like an idea that's a bad idea, but at the same time, only you can decide.
Yeah.
You know, and because somebody says that your business should be making money at this stage, that's absolutely ridiculous. Don't even pay attention to that. Keep going. You know what you're doing, right? Or even if you don't know what you're doing, you know what you're trying to do, and that's important. So that was the caveat that I was trying to bring in earlier. It was really important to me, and still is, right? So, and then I think it just falls, the story of my, the rest of it just falls into the realization that I need to build this out to be able to to stay where we are. That looks like doing more custom work that I'll lose being in the shop because I need guys and business, you know, like salespeople and stuff like that. So what happens if we try to get into like YouTube? Like, could that work? That's a question mark. Like, what would that look like? Like, how does that work? At that time, Alex Steele was going big and I was just blown away by like, there's actually that many people interested in blacksmithing. I had no idea. I did not know that there was that many people. And then the other person that was sort of influential on that side of things was Peter McKinnon was starting out and he had he's a YouTuber. If you're not familiar, he's pretty big now, very big. He just had a way of conveying emotion through his videos and I didn't know that YouTube could do that. And those two things were interesting. So that was sort of like, well, maybe I should try seeing how this could go and if we could build it up. Could get us into a position where we could untie from the valley and maybe survive somewhere else. So that's sort of the fast paced of that up to YouTube, I guess, on that side.
There you go.
Yeah. Alec was a big influence on blacksmithing on YouTube. He was one of the first guys to get a channel to blow up.
Oh, and did it ever blow up? Holy crap.
Yeah. No, I started following Alex Steele back when he had like 3,000 subscribers. Yeah. I actually went over and awesome. I was one of the last private courses he ever taught.
Oh, no way. That's super.
Yeah,
cool.
No, I went over there to take the Tools to Make Tools course and got to sort of see like some of the insides of when he first started having this kind of success. Like I was there when he did his first hammer sale and just watching him lose his mind as the hammer sold out within minutes. Like the guy was bouncing off the walls.
Yeah.
You know, and to see like, you know, just from there his whole business endeavor and his YouTube channel skyrocket it was really, really amazing to watch
and
kind of have a little bit of an inside track on it.
That's that's fascinating. That was something that I thought YouTube was going to be just monetization from the AdSense, like that's what we had to do, and I didn't know a different way. So we were just really I was just trying to grow on that. At that time, the way it was working is I had Martin working for me and we were holding the fort down with doing this by the hour work for Jerry. And then any free time I was trying to make a video for YouTube and just grow this thing to make it work. And it was just this perpetual, like, here's a video. Oh, like I'm not making money. Like, how is this going? Like, okay. They've got to keep growing. And it's just like the realization of like, I don't think I can make this work. Because the amount of money that we have to grow, or sorry, the amount of subscribers you have to get from just monetization is like nutso. So I'm like, yeah, but I still love doing this. I want to see where it goes. So we were just doing that kind of philosophy. And then like at that point in time, I don't know where I was with subscribers, but we were just growing. We had a couple good clicks off. I think the first, so looking for content, I built an axe video out of train rail. 100-year-old train rail. That at that time, I think the video pinged like 60,000 views over a while. We're like, oh, that's pretty good. That's awesome, which it is. And then we had some bigger hits. I think the Titanium Axe, that was our first, I think, like million or my first video. That was like, oh, wow. Interesting. Wow. Very interesting. And then
cheers again.
I came into the shop one morning. I'm like, Martin, we're going to build a Damascus Zippo, and it's going to be awesome. He's like, that is awesome. And so I'm like, okay, all right. But I've never made Damascus before. Should I tell everybody that? No, I'm just going to tell you. So like, what kind of Damascus? I don't know, the feather pattern. That looks pretty cool. All right, let's do that. So it's like every cut on that first Damascus was like just hoping this works, right? And then it was like, pass the puck to Martin, and it's like, Martin, do not screw this up. We do not have time to go back and machine this. It has to be bang on. And he was just sweating bullets, like, for the days of cutting it. Because it's like manual machine. We don't know what we're doing. We're just, and it's like, it's pretty smoking tight tolerance to get the Zippo to fit into the case. And then it's like all the Damascus all the time, right? And that was like constant story of us, all this background pressure of like, we've got to get the, like, so in that time, what would happen is that twice a month at least, or at least once a month, I would go into my truck, I phone my wife, and I say, okay, babe, what's our bills? How much money do we need to make? Okay, this is how much we pay Martin. This is how much this costs. Okay, how many hours do I need to log on Jerry? Okay, this is how many hours. Okay, I got to go work 5 hours this day, every day, and then the rest I can do YouTube to make this work. Okay, I'm going to do that. Or it's like, it was down to that every, like, all the time. And and there was like, there was this one distinct, this is like, hopefully this is encouragement to somebody. This, the, like, there's lows in life, and there's lows in business, and there's highs. The lows for me, like, there's only a couple that I remember because they were pretty big. And it was, I was in my truck, I was having lunch, and it was a piece of bread, and it was like a crust, and that was it. And I was like, this is lunch. I'm like, because I suck. I don't know how to do this. I can't make money. I can't run a business. What am I doing? And then the realization was, but if I have a piece of bread and it's one piece of bread, what does my wife have? Sorry. It's getting real for a second.
Yeah, no,
nope, dude. That's okay, man.
Yeah,
believe me, we have got no problem with getting real on this podcast.
Yeah,
it was how many months ago was I talking about going into the funny farm?
Yeah,
I went to clown college to go and work on my mental health for 2 months.
So, the realization was my wife wasn't having food because she was giving it to me so that I could keep going.
Yeah,
that's a big hit to the everything, right? Like. Your family is sacrificing for you to be able to do what you're doing. Or is that worth the sacrifice?
Yeah.
That will mess your mind up. And then there was one other time, it was like, we're having supper and I'm like, do we not have butter? It's like $2. And she just didn't comment because we just So anyways, that was all going on. That's all in the background there, mixing around. So when the pressure is like, Martin, we've got to get this to work. Let's make it work. So anyways, the Zippo video launched. And we're like, I think it's going to be pretty cool. And it like just pinged off, like bang. We were getting views on that thing like hot. We're making money. This is awesome. We've got something really great. And then it was launched. I can't tell you, remember exact how much time. It was like maybe 6 weeks. This is going to hit a million, like no problem. I got an email from the lawyer from Zippo. Hey, we really like that video that you just put up, but you're causing some consumer confusion because you refer to it as a Zippo and we're not associated with this. Please take it down.
Oh, no.
No, are you serious? Yeah. And then that was so what that was is that was the realization that a dumb smuck Canadian boy in the backyard is actually gaining some like publicity. Like this is like a big deal. Like this is a big actually, Zippo, come on.
Yeah.
So it's like
if you've got their PR department calling you. I mean, like something's going on here.
I'm like, what am I doing? So it was like starting to realize, like, oh man, this is something here. So anyways, I did take it down. I reposted it later with cut out some words, but it never performed. Anyways, it was a great learning experience on that. We're going away. We've got all this work bang for Jerry, like 2 years or so of work. We're going to make this work. COVID hits. Kaboom. What happens when COVID hits? Everybody stops moving. What is Stanley Parkhorse drawn? Touring. All tours stop. All business stops. All projects stop. And we're like, I'm like, what do I do? I'm like, YouTube has got to be at least 2 years premature before we can even. And we were kind of just fumbling through, and I'm like, Martin, like one day to Martin, I'm just like, Martin, I can't keep you going. Like, I don't have money. And he's like, yeah, I figured that would happen soon enough. But, you know, I'm not going to go home and sit and do nothing. Like, we've got too much to do here. Let's keep going. Like, don't worry about it.
That is amazing.
I'm like, oh, I love you, man. So, well, let's go. Let's make this happen. So, you're always trying to dream up ideas with YouTube. And the idea was, hey, let's make chainmail on a video. Let's make a shirt of chainmail, riveted chainmail, the original way in 24 hours, because that's a cool title. People will love it. Okay, how long does it make to take? Like, if we have 24 hours, two guys, can we make a shirt of chainmail? It's like, well, yeah, you'd need about 6 months to do that. Oh, and that's the way all YouTube ideas, they go, oh, I got a great idea. Doesn't work in reality. I still like the idea. I'm like, hey, what about this? World's biggest chainmail, and we'll just build it really big. And it'll be really cool because that'll be fun. Nobody's done that. Okay. But it's going to cost all the money we have. And we'll put a ton of time into this, but it's got to work. It's got to work. Okay. We'll do it. So Martin and I, if you haven't seen the video, go back and check it out. It's a highlight of a video we built.
It's a good video.
1,700 pounds worth of steel, 1-inch round bar. We bend all these links up, riveted together. Wow. It was a really fun project. Like from a personal perspective, it'll be a highlight.
How big?
We launched the video.
How big were the links?
Oh, sorry. They were 6-inch ID, so 8 inches.
Cool.
I think it's a beast. It's a cool piece. And then the follow up was, we'll build a chainmail video one, and then we'll shoot stuff and launch cars and just like test it. It'll be cool, right? This will work, right? Yeah, it'll work. So we launched the video and. It actually did at some point tick off and tick over a million, but it was not a great watch time. And so the return on it was, I think I got my cost of material out of it, but all the labor and stuff we put in, it was actually a devastating failure because we didn't get what we needed out of it, which is cash. And that came to the realization that what are we going to do? We can't bank on videos ad revenue. So I had somehow in that year picked up my first upsetter from a guy. It was a pneumatic upsetter is a machine that's used to originally fix and maintain and make jackhammer bits. There is no documentation in the world on this machine at that time. I just look at it and was like, it's pretty affordable. It looks like it could have potential if it would work how I think it is, but I don't know. I was talking to my wife about it. I'm like, I really think we should pull the trigger on this tool to see if it's going to work. So we bought it, hadn't really used it. And so Martin and I were like, hey, we're going to build a product. We're going to try to see if we can sell it to our audience just to see if that'll work. And we're going to build it on the upsetter. So we spent like a month, 2 months after that fail of the chainmail video. And we got our axes figured out, the Hudson Bay style. Launched it in November, 12 axes. Hope this works. They sold out, I think, in like overnight or it was a couple hours. And then it was like light switch. Okay, we got something here. Let's do this. This is going to work. And then it kind of took off from that point of the realization that all the years of working on this YouTube and just grinding and not having like, I don't want to be ungrateful for any one of my subscribers, but we hadn't had absolute nutso growth. But what I didn't know is that slow growth is a community of people who actually really like you and are willing to support you. So even if, as encouragement to anybody else who's like grinding for those followers or those subscribers, those people, just keep doing that because the slow growth is very valuable.
Fuck yeah.
Committed to you. Totally. They like you.
I was going to say that it's exactly the kind of thing that Alec did. That
yes.
Putting so in those hours. Like he did a year or almost a year of a video every day, you know, just literally putting in work and constantly getting his face
and
out
his
in front
live interaction.
You get that sort of slow exponential curve.
Totally.
And I mean, I was one of those committed viewers. I was, invested enough to go and take a class.
Dude, I got super freaking lucky the other day. Somebody freaking messaged me when I posted that I can't make it to Canarm due to financial scenario, and they're like, how much do you need? Right?
Awesome. Are you coming to Canarm now?
I don't mean to interject in this story, Timothy. This is unfortunately. So I have an auntie that is not doing very well, and a grandfather that's not doing very well, and a mother-in-law that's not doing very well. And my auntie and my uncle are on their way up to Flin Flon right now for a fishing trip that we've been bugging them that we want to go on this fishing trip with our daughter for like 2-3 years now. And it's finally happening. And guess when it's happening? So,
hey,
you're in Canada.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay. That sounds like a reasonable excuse, I suppose.
Yeah.
Right.
Where is Can I Own This Year?
Fergus, Ontario.
Fergus, yep. Ontario?
August 3rd to 6th. Yeah.
Okay. I'll be there.
Hi, boy.
Good. Yeah.
Doug?
This is going to be my first Can Iron, actually.
I went, I don't remember what year. I think it was 2009. I went when it was on the island. So that was, no, what did it be? 2005? I can't remember. But it was cool. It was, at that time, it was a big encouragement and like, oh, this is really cool to see some stuff. But
how old are you then?
I can't, I gotta be around like 15 or 16.
Maybe. I am think... so jealous of you, dude.
Oh.
But you know what? Like, that was a lot of struggle and a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to get you to that point. Like,
yeah. So like,
yeah.
The story's not it's up and up at this point. But like, if somebody says, Tim, if you could start again and you know what you know, what would you do? And I can tell you right now that I don't know. I'm not sure that I would say just. Like, I don't give advice to people. Like, people say, I love blacksmithing. I want to do that for a job. And I'm like, I can't tell you that, like, go do that. If you are, like, if you are 100% committing, you're like, I'm doing this. I don't care what you say. This is what I'm doing. That I'm going to support you 100% and, like, help you out. But you are going to suffer. Like, actually, I don't want to say that. The possibility that it could be very rough for a long time is very real.
I think you can go probability.
I really hope it's different. And the pace of the world is changing really positive for us. But actually, there's a rainy cloud indefinitely very big over the world of economy right now, which is a questionable thing. So it's a high-risk time, which puts, like, I'm buried in it now, right? I got a mortgage and everything. Like, I'm bootstrapped. Like, let's hope this works out. And otherwise, we're going back to the apartment. But there's always that risk for anybody. So, and at the point too, I'm also to the point where, like, if I lose everything, that's okay. Like, I feel pretty content with my experience so far, and I'll just go to the next thing, whatever that is. Which I'm grateful to be in that spot too. That actually, we can talk at the end of that. Like, what's Tim's mindset right now? It's different than it was. I feel a lot different about things. But anyways, just if you want to do it, just be prepared for some lows. You know?
Apparently, dude. I think if you're going to decide to go into blacksmithing as a business venture, you should be very cautious of the fact that suffering is going to be attached to it. If you don't think that there's going to be, you got the blinders on.
Getting into blacksmithing to make a business, to make money, is not a good idea. There's too many better ways to make money. And so what that means is that your circle around you, so depending where you're at in life, if that's a spouse, they need to be locked in with you as best of your ability, because my wife has suffered right beside me.
Like, that's... Jesus.
Like, literally, we have suffered, right?
Yeah.
And that comes forward. Let's keep going on the story, because there's a breaking point too.
Yes.
So we just launched our first product on YouTube and we sold out, and we've never had that kind of success before. And we're like, this is awesome. So over that year, nope, it wasn't even a year. It was December. We went hard. And then 2021, I took 2 weeks off for Christmas. That's like the only time in life, for whatever reason, I can take off some time and have a not mental stress, like, meltdown. 2 weeks off. Came in after Christmas, Martin, and I'm like, Martin, this is what we're going to do. This is how much money we're going to make. It's crazy. You're going to build the axes. I'm going to help as much as I need to, or as little as I need to, and I'm going to work on YouTube. We're going to make enough money. We're going to make this thing work, because if it doesn't work this year, I don't think I can do this anymore.
Yeah.
Because my family won't fit in the house and I can't afford the rent upgrade and we need to keep going. Like, this is not going to work. That was not a cool place to be in. That will wreck your mind. So, yeah. So the deal is, in Canada, and you guys know this, I will just share it with the audience listening. And again, like, money is not the reason you do this, but there will be a certain point in life that you have to make enough money to be able to sustain what you want to do.
And that's part of that. 100%.
It's not about the money, but you need the money. And I can't remember where I was going. In Canada, when you're self-employed, the banks make it very hard to get a mortgage. And they look at your income over your last couple years. If you dip below your, like, if you have a year that's good and then you follow a year that's low, they will just take your low. They won't even take an average. So you have to scream like crazy. And you've got to get that to get the mortgage. And so what would happen mentally, and this goes into some of the mental stuff that you've got to work through, I would get sick. And I'd be like, I cannot get sick because I cannot take this time off because I will not make money and I will not get approved for the mortgage and we will be stuck in this apartment for another 2 years and my son will be sleeping in the bathroom. That will mess you up. So you got to work through that. I don't know what the answer is. Everybody will have different things that they work through and people will deal with that differently. I can't offer any help in that, but the business of running a business, the mental game is big. It's certainly something there. I'm pretty blessed that it doesn't affect me in like a way that slows me down. It probably puts fuel to the fire in some sense. And I'm also a personality that just goes harder when things get harder. Like, I'll just work more. My stress outlet for when things get stressed is to work more. So that there's positives and there's really big negatives with that. Like, getting married, I was just working all the time because I'm like, I got to get the shop done. We got to get this thing ready to go because I'm getting married. And then I'll run myself into the ground. So give myself 1 week by myself. I will go and go, and then I will crash and be sick. And so my wife is an incredible blessing for me. She's very regulative on, like, just, you quit at this time, you have supper, you're with the family, you can pick it up tomorrow.
Oh, that's so awesome you have that.
Yeah.
If I didn't have that, I would probably be just a wreck.
Yeah, and with you there, 100%.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for that. She's like the calm that holds me level. So that also, like, stretches you out long term, because I'm like, I'm here at 8 and I'm home at 4:30 and I've got this many hours and I'm gonna go like snot to make this happen. Whereas if you have a run out bleed of like, I'll just work as late as I need to, you'll dilly daddle through the day and then
you will.
Oh, it's 8 o'clock. I'm feeling tired. I'll just pick it up tomorrow. And suddenly you're like, oh, I just lost it.
Yep.
Anyways, I don't know what the answer is to that, but that's sort of some things going on. So Martin and I, we just were going, we're making axes. I'm trying to get the videos going and we're like, let's just make this happen. And we were just grateful. Like, we were getting some sponsorships, videos were doing okay, and axes were selling. This was the community. And then it came to the realization, and I want to share this just publicly, I think I was about 100,000 subscribers at that point. I think I could have gone full time on YouTube just selling to the community at probably like about 50,000 subscribers. I think it would have worked. And I didn't know that. Like, not looking at AdSense, just building a community of people who love who you are, what you do, and want to invest into you. So, like, suddenly, like, you think like 50,000 subscribers, like that's achievable, I think, like on whatever platform you choose, arguably. So I don't know, food for thought for whoever you are, where you're listening, take it or leave it. And then we just racked it. We just went hard. Like, so we're getting to the end of 2021. Is that right? Yep. And I'm just like, Martin, we have like 2 weeks left of the year. I want to crush this. I'm trying to get every ounce out of it. What can we do? And I'm like, why don't we just do like an axe refurbishment? Because we wouldn't have to build the heads. We could just sharpen them and sell them, and maybe it would work. Like, maybe it would work. So I found a guy on Facebook Marketplace, and he's like, used axes, has a whole bunch of axes. I'm like, okay, I'll just go down and take a look at this guy. So it's like sketchy part of Burnaby, and it's like an apartment. I'm like, what is going on? This doesn't add up. What? It's like, knock on the door. Yeah, come in. Yeah, it's my mom's place. I'm moving out, but come to my bedroom. And the guy had axes full, all of his bedroom, like all these axes. He's like, I'm like, well, show me what you got. So he starts bringing them out in the hall, right? And I'm like, okay, we better start sorting these through. And he was expecting like, you know, one or two that I buy. And I'm like, okay, let's put this one on a pile. Okay, let's not take that one. I'm like, hey, do you got more? He's like, well, I got my personal collection. Bring it out. Let me see it. Let's go. And he's like, oh, I don't, I can't. I'm like, no, I want that one. Okay. No, I'm not selling that one. Oh, okay, fine. You can keep that one. So like I collected about 30 heads at that point. And wow. Then I'm like, okay, like how much for this all? And he could like, he was like starting to get like shaky, right? Like adding the calculator up, like maybe like $1,500. And I'm like, okay, $1,100, let's go. Yeah. And he's just like, okay, awesome. Yeah. So it's like I just cleaned him out, threw them all in the old 4Runner, and drove to the shop. And I'm like, oh man, I hope this works because I just bought a ton of stuff. Like, we have no idea what the audience is going to think about selling refurbished axes. So we drop them on the table, and I'm like, Martin, we're going to do 10 days, and we're going to do 3 axes a day. That's pretty believable. And we're going to do daily vlogging. So I'm going to be here in the morning. I'm going to prep these 3. We're going to give 1 day lead. And then when I go, you're going to make the handle. You're going to slam on the handle. I'm going to come in the next day. We're going to film the end, outro, pictures, boom, slam those up on the website, sell it. And I'll be doing the next 3 in a day. And we're just going to go and we're going to see if this works. And it worked. Like, I don't like it was such an incredible thing. And we were able to just like, you're like, why am I forging axes when I could just buy them for the head, like doing so much work. But then after that, prices increased, unfortunately, for me to buy the refurbished axes. They got out doing what I was doing, so that was the end. But it was a really fun last little squeeze of it was a special time between Martin and I because we were really tuned up together and in sync, and you know, hitting daily videos. And, like, everything has to be to a T. And people loved it. Like, they just milked it up. I think at the end of Christmas, I had like 1 axe left over, and it was really great. So anyways, that was a slam dunk. Or sorry.
Do you know who Papa Haché is? Mark LeBlanc?
No, I don't.
If you don't mind, check him out. He's refurbishing axes as well, and he does a beautiful job. I think you might enjoy seeing some of his content.
Yeah, I would love to see that.
He's out in Quebec.
Okay. Okay. Cool.
Sorry, I again interjecting your story, dude.
No, it's all good. Sorry, this is going forever.
Dude, you're a wicked storyteller, man. This is amazing.
The best podcasts are the ones where we don't have to do much talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear us anyways.
It's fun to share the behind the stories. There's always behind a story on something. Right? And then that was like coming into 2022, which is when, as soon as after that, it was find the property, put the effort into that, get the blacksmithing stuff moved over, get set up in Alberta. Hope this works. At that point, completely tying off from all custom work, architectural, completely relying on selling product to folks and making YouTube videos. And then like that's kind of in a nutshell, that's where we are right now. And so we'll see how the next season goes. You know, you never know, but the axe thing is fully developed into the Black Hawk hatchet and the Black Hawk axe, which are made from train rail. 1912 right now. We've run a different series. And yeah, we're just fattening the inventory and, or not the inventory, but the product line, just get some different products going that I have ideas for.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can keep wheeling, dealing on YouTube to keep that fire going. And
yeah, buddy.
I don't know. We'll see what happens, you know?
Okay. Here it comes. Are you ready for this? I've been saving this for the right time.
Oh, okay. Boy.
start your rap jig here, you guys, because here it comes. I want to talk about X, baby. I want to talk about you and me. I want to talk about all the good things and the bad things. Oh, God.
What is happening?
Wow. Cringe level 9,000.
Yeah, yeah. That was salt and pepper beard.
Yeah, the axe version.
Yeah, there you go.
Everybody loves what you're doing with the axes, buddy, including myself. I'm like soaking up the content when it comes to you building the axes, especially out of the train rail. Watching, dude, the quench video. Amazing, amazing educational video to see how you compare the difference between 50 and triple. What is it, 50 and triple A?
Triple A.
Yeah, buddy. Amazing video. I thought that was brilliant to show that, to show everybody how you did the scientific comparison between the two quenches, how you talked about how your hardness tests were.
Yeah, no kidding. I'm like in shock right now.
Well, I work in research and development. So to me, that hit home, how you documented all the different hardness levels of normalization after quench and then after temper as well, and compared the two oils to each other, and then also afterwards did field testing to see how it reacted to those different quenches. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. To me, anyways.
It comes out of your mouth a lot better than it comes out of my mind, because in my mind it's like, I got to make a video. I don't know what to do, but I've got to get the work done. We've got to know if this axe is going to be good enough. We'll just film this and hopefully this works.
for nerds like us, this stuff is gold.
Yeah. And funny enough, you say that, dude. Yeah. Some of my most favorite videos that you have done probably aren't favorites by other people, but like one of the ones you showed was you dissecting the electrical system on, what was it, your lathe, or it was something,
probably a milling.
Maybe it was the milling machine. Yeah. I thought that was awesome, dude. I was like, this is the kind of stuff that for me, I mean, like I understand the blacksmithing and all this kind of stuff. So it's, you know, flash bang, whatever. It's cool to me, but getting to see the deep background of what's your problems in your business, the things that hold you back from being able to produce what you do, and then how you overcome those problems. I'm like, for the makers, I think that's like, that's gold. But as Nick was saying, right?
Oh yeah. Like the clean and refurb of the power hammer, that video or a couple of videos. I can't remember. But I loved that. I was like, ooh, I need to know this.
Yeah, talking about installing it.
Yeah.
Super interesting to hear that, you know. The I don't put a lot of thought into outside of my world, what is happening with like a video like on YouTube. Like, but the thing is that you have such a wide demographic that it's, you get somebody on kind of like that mill shot, I guarantee you almost didn't make it to the video because it's not relevant to the project. I just need a little bit more content. I just got to get this done to keep the video going. And that kind of stuff every single day, all the time, that just, it's like, I'm not filming this. I don't have time for that. And nobody wants to see it. But like, it's like, you just say, to pick that one moment out, that's very interesting. You know, that's,
I think you'd be surprised what a lot of people will take as interesting videos. And One of the things that I kind of wonder about when it comes to putting out video content, more so with Instagram Reels, I guess, versus YouTube. I'm not into the YouTube. I should be, because I just put out a couple Reels that exploded. The first one I put out, it started hitting 100K, and I was like, holy shit, 100K. Hell yeah, baby. Then I put out another one. It's at the 750K now. I'm like, what the hell happened here, boys? Yeah, this should be on YouTube. I could be making money right now, right?
So if you do not have a committed audience on Instagram right now, I think that you should stop investing in Instagram and get on a different platform. I would recommend YouTube. I would recommend TikTok, though I have no experience with TikTok. But the byproduct of posting on YouTube and TikTok, you can still 100% fulfill Instagram. But get more eggs in one basket. Or wait, is that the wrong way to say that?
Yeah, you don't want more baskets.
Whatever metaphor it is.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm actually guilty of being only on YouTube right now, and that's because I'm like, so my Instagram,
hacked at about. Yeah, I don't know what happened with that. I was sitting there going, like, I thought I was following him.
Yeah, that's right. A lot of people said that. It got hacked, and it was almost like a blessing in disguise. I'm like, perfect. Not even worrying about that, because I didn't know where that was going. I wasn't seeing any return on investment on that. I didn't know how to work it. So I dropped it, left it for months. I think it was this year, I just picked it up. I'm like, oh, I'll come back. I like posting pictures here and then. And then now, just recently, I'm like, I got byproduct of videos. I'll just slap them in there and see. But okay, going to YouTube Shorts, Instagram versus YouTube Short. Like, YouTube Shorts are gonna go way better. I have shorts that I think my biggest short is like 3.5 million views, and I made a stupid bottle opener that I could have made when I was 13. Right? Like if you don't know what's gonna go, but the algorithm growth seems to be that the algorithm is working for your video, because it'll just grind and grind for like a week, and then suddenly it'll go, and then it will suddenly go for another week, and then it'll be like, boom, gone.
Yeah.
And where you, Instagram, obviously I don't have that core to maybe get initial boost, but I don't think that's the case. Instagram, it just falls off.
Yeah. Sometimes it falls off. Sometimes it depends on, I've noticed if you just kind of post something and let it sit, if it's growing and you let it sit, it'll keep growing, and if you post something again shortly after, boom, it kills it. It's like your next video overrules that last video that you posted for whatever reason. Something different happened with that one that exploded on me. I don't know how to explain it, but it was it exploded, and I posted 5 more videos at least after, and it was still growing after that. So it's kind of a weird
one.
That
was on Instagram?
Yeah. But I looked into the insights on it. All of those plays were from Facebook.
There you go. Get on Facebook.
Yeah. Stop posting. But the reels on Facebook don't make you any money either. So like you say, YouTube.
So my thought on that particular matter would be, understand what you're trying to achieve on social media.
Yes.
Be very exact with that, because otherwise you're wasting time. So what are you trying to achieve? Do you need sales? Do you need community? Do you need growth? Or even better, say, what's your long-term projection? How do you build to that?
Right.
I'll just use myself as a case study. I was thinking about YouTube. I didn't know if I could do it from all the perspectives of like personality, investment of time, editing, you know, et cetera. I'm like, well, I have a little bit of a growing on Instagram. I'll just go hard on that just to see if I like the content creation side of things, and then decide what I want to do. And I was close enough that I'm like, I'm going to make the gap to get to 10,000 subscribers on Instagram so that I can get the swipe up function link, so that when I start on YouTube, I can use those 10,000 people to bring over to YouTube as quick as I can. I just racked out. I just went hard on Instagram. Yeah, I think I can do this. And then started onto YouTube. But
interesting.
That was my goal. I was like, I'm not trying to make money. I'm not trying to make a community. I'm trying to get growth to jump onto YouTube if I like it. And it's kind of harsh to talk about your community as just a number, because it's not very fair to the people. And so I have a hard time with that. But like at the same time, you're like, well, I want to grow to this because I want to be able to support my family and I want to be able to sell this product. I need this many people to kind of do that. Like, you kind of got to start to talk a little bit like that.
Yeah.
So
having that wolf at the door, having that wolf at the door really keeps you motivated and pushes you a lot harder than, you know, than if the wolf wasn't at the door. That's what keeps you, that's what keeps you going.
Yeah. And then if you don't need that community and that return on investment,
yeah.
Maybe don't put your time onto that. You know, like
yeah.
My time goes heavily into YouTube. Any free time is on that.
Yeah.
I want that to grow. But even in your particular case, you have a different case scenario because you're actually teaching people. So you need that person to be close enough to come to your shop. So you're like, I don't want to have the whole U.S. watching me. I want to have everybody around Red Deer so that you're going to the local farmer market instead of spending time on Instagram. Well, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it is.
Unless I want a franchise.
Yeah.
But exactly.
You know, you're looking for a goal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're looking
for
something. I don't know. But again, I gotta clarify, like, I'm not an analytics guy, and I honestly look at videos, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't know what happened. Why did that happen? Mm-hmm. I don't know why that happened.
Yeah.
This is not working forever. I don't know why that happened.
Are you doing anything in the aspect of learning how to grow your business as far as listening to other podcasts, as far as business growth, reading business books, taking business courses?
It's not a strength of mine, and I should do better because the amount of injection I have through reading books and podcasts have been beneficial. Mm-hmm. And so I could be getting into a window now where I might be able to say I'm going to carve out 30 minutes for educational development of boosting the business. I haven't had the time to do that. So it would have to be very intentional, and I'm not doing that currently. Different seasons, right? To know where you need to be.
I want to recommend to you the Welding Business Owners podcast. It's generally very short episodes. He breaks them down into 30-minute episodes. There's usually 5-6 episode segments to make a full show or full interview with the person he's interviewing. But I believe it fully crosses over to the work we do as blacksmiths, being the same industry, essentially working with metal. These are guys that are putting up handrails. Some of them, if you talk to them, have gone down the exact same road that we have gone down, with struggling with their business, learning how to make it work. And you can grow so much by listening to how other people have failed. I think personally, this podcast with you, Timothy, has been by far one of the most educational podcasts that I have had yet, as far as learning personal growth in business and as a blacksmith.
Wow, interesting. All I'm telling you is about how I screwed it up.
Yeah, it took a pretty big turn from us giving you shit right at the beginning, yeah?
Yeah, no kidding, right? No.
It's like we got into it, and all of a sudden we're like, ooh, this guy's got stuff we want to hear.
Well, I had a funny feeling, man. I've been bugging you for a good probably year now to jump on Forge Side Chat with us, and of course, I give space in between bugging you because, you know, not ready yet. Every time you're like, yeah, I'm interested, but just not ready yet. Get back to me. Time's not right yet. We're very busy right now. Things are going on, right? And after listening to all this, I'm like, holy crap. I feel bad that I was bugging you as much as I was.
Yeah, no wonder. The guy's got shit going on.
Just a little.
I do not ever take this amount of time to sit down and talk. Ever.
Yeah, so I can tell.
I was like 85% like, no, I can't do this. I don't have time. I right now have hours of work that is built up on my computer, which is in front of me. I'm just like, no, I'm going to carve out the time because it might be fun too. And it is. It's been blast. That's a struggle with self-employed.
Yeah.
100%.
You don't clock out.
Yep.
And so you have to clock in on your family. And yep. That's hard, you know?
Yeah.
Or it can be hard. And there's different seasons, right? And to reevaluate and reassess is really important. Sometimes they happen naturally, sometimes they don't. Sometimes you have to be intentional. Right now I'm really blessed. I'm in a good spot where pressure is to be on the shop floor. I got to be running the front line. Front line work is either making YouTube videos or making product to sell. And then, but that actually is not, that hasn't been a season for a long time that I've had to be on the front. Only really since the last couple of years of YouTube. It's really important that you take care of your business and run the sales. If you don't have sales, you have nothing. If you don't have cash flow, you don't have anything. And you don't have to be making money, but you've got to have cash flow. That was something Paul taught me. I'm like, Paul, can you at least tell me like one thing on how to run a business? Like, I really need some help. Paul's like, cash flow. You don't need to make money, but you've got to have cash in and cash out. I don't get that. I learned.
Yeah.
I understand that. Anyways, and so usually evenings I'm doing a couple hours of office work, soft work, I try to do a good chunk. Usually I quit at 4:30, and that's family time till the kids go down, and then check in with my wife, make sure everything's good there, and then I try to find out another hour and a bit or so of,
stuff like
that. To anybody who's listening from my YouTube world, and you've sent me an incredible email of like encouragement or question, a genuine question, and I haven't got back to you, I am so sorry. This is like now in the season of life where it's like I see an email and I'm just like, I'm so sorry. I just don't have time to get to that, you know?
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah. So while you're working in the shop, what are you listening to?
He prepped me for this question to you who are listening.
Yeah.
What's my favorite genre? What's my favorite music? I am actually, I do play music. I do a lot of church music that circles around a lot of what I do listen to. But at that being said, I don't listen to a lot of music because I don't have time. So let me explain. Let me explain. In the shop, if I'm filming, you can't listen to music.
Yeah.
If I'm in the shop working by myself, not filming, I usually can't listen to music because it's too loud.
Right.
Fair enough. If I'm editing, I'm finding music for a video. Right. So driving is if I can utilize that time to like be on a phone call, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then if I do a long trip, I'll listen to a podcast. Mm-hmm. And then I got random stuff floating around. So I'm really bad for the song one. I'm sorry to miss you guys out on that one.
Just throw out any song, any artist.
So, guilty pleasure. Taylor Swift.
Yes.
Yes, girl.
My wife and I, we click on those songs. And
Shake It Off is a banger. I don't care what anybody says.
Okay. To clarify, I actually don't list anything past Red. Red was like the last album where I was like, yeah, this is cool. I listened to like a lot of Red when I was working on my Land Cruiser when I was single and didn't have a life. and then what was the new one she just launched? And it was like the retake, and we're like, oh, this is pretty cool. I can't remember what it is right now. Anyways.
Yeah. Can't help you there, sorry.
Yeah. Speak now. Sorry.
What? Okay, but wait, what a brilliant artist to be like, I made this in the past and it was a success. Let me remake this and add a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And
it'll
be another success. Yeah. Hello, take notes, people.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir. You got
absolutely. It. That is smart. Yeah, for sure.
So, Nick, what have you been listening to, my man, while she?
I have been listening to Steely Dan.
Steely Dan, interesting.
Steely Dan, yeah.
Could you be any more middle-aged?
Right?
Okay, wait a minute. So last week it was Iron Maiden. This week it's Steely Dan. Hello. Are you starting to pick up the theme?
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah,
we get it. I picked that up a long time ago with you, bud. Sorry. So what song?
Ricky, Don't Lose My Number.
Ricky, Don't Lose My Number. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
There we go.
Old Soldier.
So one that I've been listening to a bunch. So I go and I sing sea shanties at a local sort of like once a month event. And there's Nathan Rogers, who's Stan Rogers' son, does a cover version of Flowers of Bermuda. And it's amazing.
Oh, nice. I'm putting it in the mix, buddy. I know it ain't right, but Salt and Pepper, I want to talk about sex. Okay.
Yeah, that's an appropriate level of silence for that. Everyone's just like, okay.
Reasoning to that, I mean, obviously I threw the I want to talk about Axe Baby, but Salt and Pepper was actually one of the first CDs I ever had back in the day. I can't remember how I got it. It was through a trade, and I got Guns N' Roses, Salt and Pepper, and Snow in the same trade. I couldn't have been happier, dude. I mean, Salt and Pepper, yeah, whatever. Guns N' Roses and Snow, I was like stoked. Anyways, that's my choice. Take it or leave it. I don't care. Screw you. I don't like you anyways.
Okay, those are some classic tracks. I mean, like Snow, I remember that from my childhood.
No, never mind. I'm not going to go
Informer, yes.
Yeah, Informer. Yes.
Please don't do it. Please don't.
Tim, thank you so much for the time you've given us, my man. Real quick, couple last questions, if you don't mind. Go-to hammer. Oh, I'm stealing it from you, Nick. Sorry, I did it.
Yeah. You rat bastard.
Yeah.
That's my question. Without,
you mean like a hand hammer, not a
hair
hammer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're working at the anvil, what's your go-to?
It's without a doubt in my mind, I go to my titanium hammer.
Nice.
Really?
Oh, 100%. That thing has done wonders for me. Yeah. I love it.
Wow.
I built like every axe ever I've ever made with that hammer. It's light. It's under 2 pounds, I think. So my little skinny arms can just go a mile a minute. I'm not trying to do big, heavy, chunky work with that. Just finish up. And I'm convinced that the titanium also makes you feel less shock.
There you go. Handle,
but yet you have super good feeling of what's going on. It's not a negative. My left hand is usually more tired than my right hand at the end of the day because of some big old awkward tongs. And
big right. Like
yeah, without a shadow of doubt, titanium hammer.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, man.
I think that's probably the most interesting answer we've ever had to that.
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? If I had a titanium hammer, I might say the same thing.
I think that's probably where that comes from.
Titanium hammer.
Yeah, yeah.
Project list.
And when it comes to using this beautiful titanium hammer you have, tell me about your tool. I mean, tools. What kind of anvil are you playing with there, but
nothing crazy right home. It's a 255 pound Peter Wright, heavily nice. Sweet spot in it, with surface work done on it. Horn is blunt and banged out. I got it when I was like 14 or something.
Oh, that's dope. And,
it's nothing fancy, but what I use
the fact that you still have that.
I would go. Probably my dream anvil weight. Can you guys hear me? Okay?
Oh yeah.
I just turned around. A 300 pound Peter Wright is sweet, or 350 with a good horn on it. But there is no way I can justify putting money. I'm not a tool collector, as some would. So the return on investment from going from my 255 to a 300
that money is really spent better put into other things.
Right.
Because an anvil from one anvil is not going to make you more money.
No. How good of condition would you want it to be in?
What are you thinking there?
I don't know. I have
Lando's maybe got something in stock.
I have a 400-pound Peter Wright that I'm not too fond of.
How come you're not too fond of it?
He's not a fan of Peter Wright's.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Yeah. Really?
I don't. I'm not.
I like mine. I like my
Peter actually. Wright. I'm not one or the other. It's yeah. just an anvil that works good yeah. for me.
Well, I have a Peter Wright that the tool plate is failing at the forge weld, and that alone has discouraged me from Peter Wright's.
Yeah, you can actually see the plates on Peter Wright's quite a bit.
Yeah. Mine, I have 168-pound Peter Wright where the tool plate was actually like not forge weld a good inch in to the tool plate. Between the rut and the tool plate, I had to grind it out. I did a crack penetration, die penetration on it and chased the crack down an inch in. And I was like, holy crap. And the reason I did that is because chunks of the edge had been cracked off and you could tell that there wasn't a proper lamination there. So I started to investigate and that's what I found.
But the good thing is, you know what you're getting when you buy one because you can assess it. Over 100 years old, pretty much. So,
yeah.
Oh, that's got a bad plate. I know that. I'll just, you either buy it or not. So I found, I don't know what anvil, maybe a Trenton, I don't know. And they cut the heel off right at the hardy hole. So there's no hardy hole in the back. But the face, it does have chips and stuff, but it's dead flat. It was $60.
Dude.
It's like, I can make a living
deadly.
On that thing.
Yeah. Well, and there's the good ball bearing trick, right? Drop the ball bearing on it and check for rebound. When I got that Peter Wright that I'm talking about where it's delaminating, that was the first anvil I got. I did not know anything about anything at the time. I got that anvil, a blower, a box full of books, tongs, a whole bunch of stuff for $300, dude.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. And that's like one thing that's like gone crazy in the last, I don't know how many years, like, the cost of an anvil is nuts.
Yeah, the Forge and Fire boom really kind of took the prices. Yeah.
If you're starting out, just forget the anvil and just get a big chunk of steel.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. That's what I tell everybody too.
I could build an axe on like a 2x6-inch piece of plate on end. Yeah. Like if you want to build a knife, I'm sure you know you could do that. An anvil is a very valuable tool, but if you've only got X amount of dollars, just spread it out. Get other tools that will help you way further. I do use it for all the finishing work on the axes, but everything else except for the last final handwork is done on something else. It's actually crazy. You know? I got all my tools. I guess I'm set up for that. 255 Peter Wright keeps going.
Beautiful. I have one personal question I want to ask you that's left on my list. One of your videos that I just watched was you fitting an axe to the handle and you press it so tight the axe head does not come off the handle. And then you talk about how you add a wedge to that as well afterwards. Do you simply drive the wedge into that tight wood or do you have to take the handle off and create a slot for the wedge?
So I'll just tell you the process of how we do it, and hopefully that answers the question. As of last year, I started buying all my handles from Hoffman, Liam Hoffman.
Yeah, man.
So I know what every handle – he's got his copy lathe. So every handle is identical, like a 3 thou tolerance difference.
Wow.
Close for us, Maximus.
Yeah. Yeah.
I spend actually a massive amount of time tooling up so that when my axe comes off the forge, all we do is we take his handle, we cut a kerf in it on the bandsaw. So we just cut down about a 2/3 of the axe head. I'll just say it like that.
Okay.
Then I have made up dies that hold the handle. We press on the head onto the handle. Because I've dialed in my stuff so good, if you, when the head is set at the level it needs to be on the handle, if you take it off, you've got like 100% compression fit all the way around with about a 1/16th of compression on the wood. So you could press that on. You could press it on without a wedge and you could go cut a tree down and that head would not come off. It is crazy. And then now that we've pressed that on with the kerf in it, I take the wedge and then we put it on the press and then we push it in. And so when that gets pushed in, it's done. The only way that handle comes out of that axe head is if you drill it out. It will not come out. It's crazy how tight they get. When you set it up perfect, it's
awesome.
That's awesome.
Hallelujah. Thank you, sir. That was brilliant. I love it. I don't know, guys. Anything else?
No. Thank you very much, Tim. That was an awesome story. And
really appreciate it.
I think we all learned from it. Yeah, thank you very much. Cool.
Thanks for having me.
Dude.
You betcha. And sorry about razzing you.
I know we gave you a hard time. We gave everybody a hard time.
Jeez.
All good.
Yeah.
Right on.
Take off.
If you're ever in Red Deer, stop in.
Yeah, you know what? I will be someday.
Sweet. Yeah, for sure. It's a small problem.
That's awesome, buddy. Well, let's wrap it up with a good old coo 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 coo. Oh, that was beautiful. You guys are awesome. Good day.
Good day.
There, haven't had that nearly enough lately, man. Thank you.
Yeah, I know. I've been busy.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.
So long, everyone.
Okay. We're rolling, guys. It doesn't necessarily mean that this is the beginning, but we're rolling now. Let's so actually what we like to do is we like to start off the show with a good day A from the whole groups. We usually start it off with the guest giving us the first good day A, and then we roll into us, and then we give a little bit of an introduction to the show, and then we can roll into who we are.
Good day, eh? Good day, eh?
Like Bob and Doug McKenzie. Good day.
Wait a minute. Eh? Hang on. You're Canadian and you haven't figured out good day A?
Good day, eh? It's more like keep the forge lit, eh? That's the way I like to roll.
That's it.
Give us back the citizenship, man. Give it back. You're doing the odds. You're Canadian. Come on, man.
He can do it.
All right. Hey? What?
Doug and Bob McKenzie.
Like Bob and Doug.
No, guys, I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, no.
Wait. No. I got to say, for the audience, you can't see, but the three dudes, they're just looking at me like deer in the headlight. What? You don't know, Tim? Sorry, guys.
It's not deer in the headlights. It's just disgust.
It's
You're Canadian. Timothy Dick, you're a Canadian, and you don't know who Doug and Bob McKenzie are.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. Just giving it to him.
Oh, we have to give you remedial media to go and check.
For the audience, we're 15 seconds in here and I'm getting roasted.
No kidding.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
All right. What did I sign up for here? All right. Let's keep it going.
That chat.
I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn. Teach me.
Oh, my God.
SCTV from the 70s and 80s? I mean, Bob and Doug McKenzie. You know,
strange brew. No.
It's where
strange
brew. Yeah, it's where the term hoser came from.
Oh,
of course, I can drive a speed, 10 speed. It's like 2 5 speeds.
Okay.
That's gonna be the intro to the show. Of course, I can drive. All right, who cares? Jesus, get over it, guys. Wow. Okay, Tim, Nick, Welshy, then myself.
There you go.
Okay.
Go ahead, Tim, with a good day.
Me?
Yep. Yeah, you. Yeah, your name's Tim. Yeah.
Good day, eh? Guys, lead me on. Let's go.
Okay. One.
Good day, eh?
Good day.
And welcome to another Forge Side Chat. That's that was going to be
your turn, buddy.
No, I
don't. Oh, you want me to
Lando.
Yeah, I'm last. I do the intro for Tim, right?
No.
Welcome to another Forge Side Chat. We're talking about Canada, eh?
Usually it goes guest.
Right.
You and then either me or Welshie.
I'm gonna edit all this. I'm not gonna edit. I'm gonna have to edit. No, okay.
You're definitely gonna have to edit this.
Sorry, guys. Butchered it.
It's not your.
Holy cow! We can't even make it through the intro today.
This is amazing. Tim, can you start us off with another good day, please? Okay, that's it. Episode 100's in the bag. Timothy Dick, you guys. How awesome was that, man? Make sure you go check him out on YouTube. Subscribe, like, and review all of his videos that you can. Give him some feedback there. And really, from the bottom of my heart, and I know all the other guys here at Forge Side Chat, thank you all so much for sticking with us to episode 100. It's been an amazing journey to this point, and I can't wait to keep on going with this. We got episode 101 coming up right away. I think this one's going to really blow you guys away. I've got a special guest lined up for this one, and it's awesome. I'll tell you that much. It's already recorded, and it's going to be coming out soon. I'll tell you this little secret on the DL. If you listen this far into the episode, then you get to know the DLs, right? What else is on the DL? Well, that's about it. Forge Side Chat continues. I'll catch you later. Bye for now.